Good morning, everyone. We are absolutely delighted to have all of you here for Flowserve's analyst meeting this morning. We really appreciate you joining us today, and it's really great to see so many familiar faces in the audience. As most of you know, I'm Jay Roush, and I'm joined today by Scott Rowe and Mike Mullen from the company. You know, when Scott first joined back on April 1st, he said words to me that really make an investor relations professional excited, and that was that he truly valued the financial community, wanted to be very engaged with them, meet with them frequently, and really exactly what we wanted to hear. Nevertheless, being new to the company, we agreed that Scott was going to spend the first few months really internally focused and customer focused. And we've reached that point now where we're making the turn and getting Scott out and visiting with our shareholders and our analysts. Really, so we're pleased to be making the turn at that point in time, at this point in time. Before Scott comes up and I turn the podium over to him, I wanted to do first a couple of housekeeping items. I think you're pretty much all familiar with safe harbor disclosures. I encourage you to read this lengthy paragraphs at your convenience, but please know that today's presentation will include forward-looking statements. However, our discussion today will be focused on the longer-term perspective. We're not going to be covering short-term items, third quarter, full year, any of that. This presentation is also going to be webcast, so your questions this morning will be over the web, and we appreciate all of those who are joining us today online. Finally, after Scott presents this morning, we're going to open up the meeting to your questions. I think we probably have about 30, 40 minutes of prepared commentary. Probably another 30 or 40 minutes of questions if you've got that many, and then we'll conclude today's meeting. And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Scott Rowe, Flowserve's President and Chief Executive Officer.
Great. Thank you, Jay, and good morning to everyone here in New York. I have to stay here because there's a microphone that we're webcasting this morning, so I'm going to stay fixed behind the podium, but it's definitely not my natural inclination to stand still here. But just again, good morning and thank you for coming, and to everybody on the webcast, hello, and we appreciate your support and participation in this morning's session. As Jay said, I've been a Flowserve for 6 months now, has spent a lot of time with our employees, our internal operations, and with our customers, and haven't done much, if any, with our investors and the analyst community. It is time to turn that corner. And so from this point forward, we'll start a program where we can actively go out and start talking. But, you know, with Jay and I, you know, coming brand new into the company, the last thing I want to do is start to talk about our future when, quite frankly, I didn't understand what was going on within the company. So today we'll talk a lot about my observations, what I've seen, and then general direction from this point forward. And obviously, as we progress, right, we'll have more refinement on those plans and get more specific on our detailed plans and how we expect to move forward. And as Jay said, we will have time for questions at the end. And so I think we'll probably go about 30 minutes on content and then switch over to questions and answers. All right. So as always, we'll just start with a little bit of an overview and key takeaways. I will hit most, if not all, of these points as we go through the presentation. So I'm not going to read through each one of these line by line. My guess, in just in summary, right, we have an incredible platform here at Flowserve with our history, our presence, our expertise, and our installed base globally. And it's something that we can absolutely build on and create value as we go forward. We do believe the markets are going to turn, and I'll go into kind of a market outlook slide and why we have conviction on that. And then the other one is just we're now at the realization that we have to transform Flowserve to be successful in today's current environment. And so we'll touch on the tenets of our transformation, what we're calling it, and how we'll go forward with that. And then finally, you know, we just want to remain good stewards of Flowserve's capital. And that won't change. I've got a slide in terms of what that means and how we look at that on the go-forward basis. All right, so I believe it's really important to start with history. And if you understand a company's history or, you know, the history of a nation or an entity, it helps you figure out where you want to go, you know, looking forward and into the future. And so I've personally spent time on our history, and Flowserve has an incredibly rich heritage. And when we look back, I mean, it was formed in 1790 with Simpson and Thompson out of the UK. And so we've built on that through a collection of acquisitions throughout the years. We formed Flowserve nearly 20 years ago, bringing two larger companies together, and we continue to add to that portfolio. We have an incredibly strong brand basis, right? We've got brands like Worthington, Byron Jackson, and Valtech that are industry recognized and are leaders in their specific space. And we just have an incredible portfolio that we can manage and work with as we go forward. So it's now my job to take what we have, the legacy, the heritage, the presence, the brand, and start to create value creation as we go forward into the future. And I think we've got just an unbelievable opportunity to do that with building on our heritage and legacy. All right, so this is just bolstered by the numbers. Everybody in the room has seen this several times, so I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but it is a nice context-setting slide. We've got a vast global presence, right? We have 17,000 associates. They're all over the world. We're represented in over 50 countries. We have scale. We have a broad portfolio. We have 2 million installed pumps. So our installed base of products is second to none in the industry. And we have a local presence where that installed base is. And so we've got over 183 different quick response centers that give us the platform to capitalize on the local opportunities and in the local regions. All right, next I want to talk about the team. So for me, you know, any change starts with having the best possible team. I've been a part of many different teams, and I truly believe in the power of having a high-performing leadership team. And we are well on the way to creating that now at Flowserve. The first thing I did was flatten the organization. I think everybody's familiar that we had a COO in Tom Pajonas, who did a great job for us for many years. But for me, that's not the structure I like to work in. So we've removed that position. We've flattened this, and all the positions that are on the slide actually work directly for me. And we can say that, you know, we can debate, is it too much or too little? But what it does is we've elevated the key functions and the key positions that I think are instrumental in the transformation of Flowserve. And then in addition to that, we've complemented the veteran Flowserve team with strong leaders and functional expertise. And so now more than half of my team is new to Flowserve, and I've spent a lot of the first 6 months recruiting and attracting the best possible talent to fill the roles that we have. Now, you know, we have some great people in Flowserve, and we're not, you know, getting rid of those, like Kim Jackson, Kirk Wilson, and John Lenander, who are absolutely experts in their field. They know the industry incredibly well. They know Flowserve incredibly well. And we expect them to do their jobs and do them better today than they've ever done in the past. I do want to highlight the folks that we have been, that we've now brought on board. So the first one, and everybody in a red box here is essentially new to Flowserve. That's the way to read the slide here. But let's start with David Wilson. David joined 3 weeks ago. David's going to lead IPD for us. David came out of SPX Flow. He had a long career there. He spent time living in Asia, and he led their industrial products division at SPX. And so strong industrial market background, very familiar with international industrial markets, and worked through an incredible, you know, the downturn and had incredible results in that downturn. So a track record of success leading global and international businesses. So David's in week three. He's on the road. He's out at our plants. He's meeting our people. I'll be in Europe with him in 2 weeks, and we'll get him up to speed as fast as we can. And obviously, IPD is a critical turnaround element that we've got to focus on. So pleased to have David on the team, and I expect really good things from him. We don't have Lee Eckert's picture here, but we made the announcement last week. So Lee Eckert will be the new Flowserve CFO. Lee will start on October 9th, and it can't be soon enough for me personally, although Jay has done a wonderful job as our interim CFO. And I said this before, what we've been looking for in our CFO is somebody that's very operational, but also has the bigger picture context of how do you create value in a dynamic environment. And so Lee started his career at GE. He's worked up through financial operations and manufacturing for many years. He's worked at several other companies in leadership roles on the manufacturing side. Kind of a no-nonsense, very good on the cost, very good at restructuring type things. And then recently worked at CHC Helicopters. And for those that know, CHC is very much dependent on the most upstream deep water oil and gas environment. And so they've been absolutely crushed as they went through the downturn on oil pricing. And Lee was there pretty much right at the, as it was really good, rode it down, worked through all kinds of capital structure changes into bankruptcy and has now worked them out. So a really strong financial player when it comes to the equity markets, the debt markets, and just thinking through capital structure and how to do things best. So I'm very happy to have Lee on board. Again, he starts October 9th, and we'll have him on the next earnings call. I'm going to go through kind of some of the key changes on the functional side in the slide coming up, but I do want to touch on marketing and technology. We promoted somebody from within. He now works for me, and I'll touch on what that organization is in a minute. And then I've brought folks from the outside in supply chain, operational excellence, and IT that all of them I've known and worked with in the past and have incredible confidence that they can do what we need to do here at Flowserve. And again, I'll touch on more of what that means as we go forward. All right, the next slide just talks about or just shows visually what our internal structure is. So externally, you know, we show engineered product and IPD and our FCO or our valve division. Internally, we have four platforms, right? So we have engineered valves, which is essentially highly engineered pumps in complex project environments, right? So when you think about core competencies here, it's around project management, it's big projects, it's cost control, and it's getting that larger integrated project to our customers on time with the highest quality. IPD or industrial products is much more around pre-configured pumps. So think standard products, shorter lead times in a more general industrial environment. What I would say with IPD is we need to continue to move that portfolio and migrate it using better tools, systems, and business processes to fit that mission statement of being quick, responsive, configured, and standard. AMSS stands for Aftermarket Services and Solution. Again, Kirk Wilson leads that. Essentially what this is our QRC network, our aftermarket business, and it includes our very good seals business is under Kirk as well, which most of that is in aftermarket, but he leads both new and aftermarket seals. And then finally, John Lenander is leading our FCO division, and essentially all of the valves and automation fall under John and in flow control. All right, so then back to the functions here. So for me, I've been very focused on making sure that functionally we have the right leaders in place, and I believe that you can create value with that, with having the proper people in here and putting what's important at a corporation that goes across the entire enterprise. And so we've done that and we've reorganized. And I expect our functional leaders to drive industry leading practices and drive those across the entire Flowserve enterprise. And we'll go into a little bit more of that when I talk about the changes. But I'm not going to read through all the text here, but I do want to highlight a couple of them. So marketing and technology was recently formed. It's been in place for 2 months now. And essentially what that is having a single organization that's focused on our markets. And when I say our markets, it's not the, you know, I'm not necessarily talking about the Marcom side. I'm talking about the analytical market of segmenting our markets, defining attractive markets, and figuring out where our products and services compete best. And so that's the remit on the marketing side. And then they also have the new product development in the technology side as well. So we're combining those two together so we don't have gaps in terms of what we're investing in internally, and we're making sure our investments are going into the best markets possible where we believe that we can get an outstanding return, but more importantly, you know, making sure that we're doing it thoughtfully and deliberately from a process standpoint. So again, we're 2 months into that. I think it's been a needed change at Flowserve. It's been welcome and it's been embraced thus far by the entire organization. The next one I want to talk about is supply chain. We've elevated supply chain to me just because I think there's such an opportunity here on supply chain. I'll go more into this when I talk about our transformation and kind of where we've come from. but there's a big prize here, and we need to capitalize on it, leveraging the global spend and scale of Flowserve fully to do things much more cost-effective with our suppliers. And so that means migrating to low-cost countries, but it also means leveraging the scale that we have. And so we've got a strong leader in place there, and we've begun to launch that initiative. But as you guys know, that one is not one that you can flip the switch and get immediate results, but that'll be a longer-term program that we deliberately take steps year over year. And then the last one I just want to highlight is operational excellence. So we've created a team here. I've brought somebody that I've worked with in the past to lead this. It's brand new. The guy, he started 2 weeks ago, so he's very new on his job. But the intention is making manufacturing a core competency of Flowserve. And, you know, obviously we've been in manufacturing for many years, but I think there's a significant opportunity for us to take step forward in that manufacturing competency in creating an operating model that goes across the enterprise to manufacture best in class. All right, so that's pretty much it on the organization and kind of what we've done on that structure and how we're changing things. I do want to spend a minute on Hurricane Harvey recovery. Obviously, I'm going to talk specifically about Hurricane Harvey because we have a lot of people in the Gulf Coast, and we have a huge customer base and installed base in the Gulf Coast. I don't want to diminish the devastation that's happened in Mexico with earthquakes, what's happened with Irma in Florida, and then what's happening in Puerto Rico currently with the latest hurricane. So those are all really important and catastrophic events. But I want to focus on Harvey because it does impact Flowserve in several ways. I'll start with our employees. We have over 400 employees in the Gulf Coast. Fortunately, we had a lot of people that were impacted by the storm, but fortunately nobody was injured, and our families of all of our employees are safe at this time. We have 13 facilities in the Gulf Coast. Most of them were impacted and shut down for several days, if not in the 2 week time period. All of those facilities are now up and operational and supporting customer needs. There are 36 different installations, customer installations that we support in the Gulf Coast region. About a third of those were offline for weeks, and there are some that are still offline. We immediately, once we got our employees back into our facilities, which happened reasonably quickly and much quicker than I expected, we started to switch our effort heavily to supporting our customers and getting them back up and online. And so now our attention is fully on that. Our operations are in place and ready to go. We do think that there's a positive impact with our business to the Harvey response, but it'll be offset with a little bit of downtime in Q3 sliding into Q4. And then an uptick as we help our customers get back online. What I would say is I don't want to put a massive expectation on this. Most of the issues, for Harvey were around wind damage in the South Texas region. As you shift more to Houston in the Beaumont area, it was freshwater flooding. So in years past, you had saltwater invasion in the facilities, which was catastrophic and was a huge benefit to Flowserve. On the freshwater side, what we're seeing is operators trying to flush pumps out with different mediums and then trying to just do instant repairs on site. We believe that won't be fully productive and we'll actually get more repair business down the line, but that's going to be more of a first quarter event than a second quarter. Anyway, the point here is, you know, a massive event impacted a lot of our facilities. It basically took me offline for a week as I was going site to site and meeting all of our people in the facilities. Which was a great opportunity for me to touch more of our people and get out there. But it was a big event, and ultimately will make Flowserve a better company and will build better partnerships with our customers as we're moving them back online. Okay, so now I want to switch to the markets, and at the last slide we'll touch on kind of our views on the market outlook. Everybody in this room is intimately aware of where we put our products. So I'm not going to go through this or go through percentages or anything like that. What I'll say is that Flowserve has the ability to provide pumps, valves, and seals throughout the entire energy spectrum, right? From the most upstream applications, right, on a production setting or, you know, even as much on drilling rigs, and we can go all the way down into renewables and general industries. So that's a really good thing that we have this broad canvas to put our products and services anywhere we need to. It's also a bad thing if you get over distracted and you're not focused about where you go and how you do that. And so I'd say that the future of Flowserve will be around a very proactive and focused team that is looking at the attractive markets in this broad space. And so even in the downturn, there were areas or segments within this that had growth. And what we've got to make sure is that our portfolio is positioned as well as it possibly can to be captured on those attractive markets and the growth areas, regardless of the cycle. So we've got that team in place, again, the marketing and technology. We've really started to segment our markets, and now we're making sure that when we think there's a market that's going to be attractive and outperform the general market, that we're positioning ourselves best for that. And so that's really the takeaway on that slide. Again, you've seen most of the numbers on this slide as well. The takeaway really is that Flowserve is an incredibly balanced portfolio in almost every aspect that you can think of. So geographically, again, we're all over the world and we've got nice geographic distribution, and that's on the top left of the slide there. From a segment perspective, we've got a nice balance on our segments. Obviously, we need our IPD business to start growing and be a bigger portion of the pie there. And at the end market level, we've got a nice balance. And again, we've got products that can go into any application or most applications across that entire spectrum. And then finally, we've got the aftermarket and the new split, that gives us a nice balance. And so when leveraged properly, we should be able to do a better job than what a market condition gives us. And the challenge for us is how to do that properly. Again, making sure that we have the right products and the right services in the different markets and niches that we think will give us outsized growth and returns. Okay, I've got one more slide that everybody again is aware of and has seen before, and so I don't want to diminish the intelligence in this room. But essentially, all this is the CapEx spend and setting up my next slide here. So it's more of a transition. But essentially on the CapEx slide, right, we've plotted CapEx from 2012 through 2017. Everybody knows that we're in a massive cyclical downturn. You can see that here as we turn, you know, all the graphs start to come down from 13, 14, and into 2017. What's important about this is we're going to show that that's coming down. But again, we're setting up this slide, and really what we're seeing is a deceleration in the rate of change on the capital spending. And so, you know, I think everybody's aware of pressure curves and how this works, but the zero line there, if you're above the zero, that capital spend is growing on a year over year basis. If you're below the line, it's not growing. And so what you can see is all of these curves, right? Oil and gas, chemical, power, and general industries started to align in 2013. And went below that zero line. And so you had all four of the platforms that we play in now at negative growth from a period of 2014 to 17. We haven't seen that in the last 15 years. We didn't go back and plot it all the way back. But typically you get some counter cyclicality with the different markets and you'd be in a better place than we are today. Now, the only good news on this slide is now you're seeing an inflection point here at the end of 2016 and into 2017. And what that inflection point tells you is that we're now slowing at a much slower rate than what we were before. And so we're declining now at a better rate than previously. Now, we did this on year over year, and obviously we can do it quarter over quarter, and we've done this for all of our bookings. But basically the takeaway, and it gives me confidence to say this, is that we're at or near the bottom of this cycle. And we very much believe that all of these markets are cyclical. And then at some point, we start to see, you know, growth, and we come above that zero line and the business starts to grow again. The big question, obviously, is when is that? Is that going to be the fourth quarter? Is it the first half of next year? Is it the second half of next year? And we don't know exactly when that is, but we do have confidence that money starts to come back into each of these markets. And our job will be positioned as well as we can to start to capitalize on the upcycle when it does indeed come. Okay, so Flowserve 2.0. So we're calling our transformation Flowserve 2.0. And we're calling it 2.0 because it resonates internationally. It's easy to understand with our employees and externally. But also, more importantly, what we're saying is that we're not going to throw away all of the good things that have happened at Flowserve in the past. So we want to build on everything historically that worked incredibly well, and we want to start to change the things that weren't working well that will position us for today's environment. So what we did here is we layered a bookings line, and we went 2010 through 2017. Obviously, there was massive growth from 2010 to 2014. Then the markets adjusted. And essentially, the slide's meant to explain that the operating model of legacy Flowserve worked incredibly well in the upcycle. And that operating model was built on basically the foundation or the principle of decentralized organizations at the local level doing the best they can in a regional marketplace. And again, in an upcycle, that works really, really well. What that operating model didn't have was, and wasn't, you know, and where it's been hurting us in the down cycle, is that it wasn't easily scalable. So we didn't have the ability to scale it down as the market went down. We had very limited ability to flex our costs in the down cycle. And it was very difficult to leverage best practice and expertise across the entire enterprise. So now as we transition to Flowserve 2.0, what we're looking to create is a flexible and optimal cost structure. We need Flowserve to be a much more nimble organization than we have been in the past. And we've got to have a platform where we can capitalize on our scale, our knowledge, and the expertise across the company. Because again, our history and the people that we have are incredible. We've just got to make sure we've got the environment and the platform where we can share those ideas and capitalize them on them globally. So I think it's important to say, right, you know, Flowserve was run incredibly well during that upcycle. It was just a different business model. But now as we look at the down cycle and where the market is and what we need to do to position ourselves for today's market, but also position ourselves for growth, we've got to make a pretty drastic change with the operating model and the way we go forward. So I'll give a little bit more color on this, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of questions on what this means. And so again, we're 6 months in, we're defining the problem. We've got ideas in terms of direction. We're working through specific plans that we'll share as we go forward. But here's kind of the four tenets or pillars of Flowserve 2.0. And I'll start with realignment because obviously it's a big program. We're spending a lot of money on this and we've got a lot counting on that program to be complete. I'm glad Flowserve has started this program. What I would say for me is it's just one single tenet of our program. It's not the whole thing. It's not all encompassing. There's a lot more work to be done than just the realignment program. And so we need to further rationalize our roofline, and we need to accelerate the program to completion. But for me, you know, rationalizing your manufacturing footprint is never complete, right? It's our job to always look at what's the best possible layout, who's the most efficient, how do we best serve our customers and local markets, and how do we have the best possible cost position to do that. So this is a journey that will never end for me. We'll always look at our portfolio of manufacturing facilities and make sure that it's the best possible platform to serve our customers. All right, so the second tenet is the Flowserve operating system. And so we need to create standard process across the enterprise that works for everybody, for our valve division, the IPD division, and EPO. And it'll start with consistent business practices that we're going to implement globally. And that's obviously a very broad word. But what I'd say is when you put that into practice, there's a lot of value to doing things harmoniously across the enterprise. And then secondly, you know, we will pursue common global systems across the enterprise. And so I think, you know, everybody knows we have multiple ERP systems, and we've got some disparate and legacy systems that quite frankly aren't working as well as they should. So with our IT hire, again, who I've known and worked with before, we need to quickly implement single systems across all of Flowserve. Obviously, we can't do this one overnight as well, but we're now beginning to put plans in place to do this and move that forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions on that in the Q&A section. And then finally, we've got to centralize our manufacturing capability and our supply chain. So we've made the organizational change to start to do that. We want to bring these two functions more in the central command and control, and then allow our operations to benefit from a much more deliberate approach there. So this is a pretty heavy lift. It'll be a longer term program. And again, we'll start to define this more specifically as we go forward. The next one is committing to technology. And you know, when I look at Flowserve, we are a technology leader in the space today. We've got products that serve most of the applications. And essentially what I'm saying is we need to double down on this. And so, you know, while this industry is very much mature, right, our pumps and valves have been there for a very long time, I truly believe there's plenty of room for innovation. And so we need to be thinking about how do we provide the best possible solutions for our customers? How do we invest in the right technology that allows us to differentiate even more than we can differentiate today? And I believe that we have a lot of room to do this. So again, we've created the platform with marketing and technology to do this organizationally. We've changed our process to make sure that we're investing in the right products that will give us that level of differentiation. And then the other one is really being, this is more a philosophy, but being more market-led and customer-focused. And so again, we've created that marketing and technology organization to really point us in the right direction from a market standpoint. And then on the back half of that side is we've got to have a much more customer-focused mindset. And so, you know, when we look at kind of, you know, all the buying habits and you know, customer surveys and all the customer input we have, the single biggest factor on repeat orders is having a positive experience in the order that they've just done. So if you can perform for a customer, if you can deliver on time with quality products, then a repeat order is much more likely than if you didn't do those things. And so we've got to have a customer first mindset in full serve. We do that well at the local sites and the QRCs. We've got to bring that to the manufacturing into all of our functions as we go forward. So we believe that if we do these things, we start to drive the financial changes that we need, right? So that's reduced structural costs, being much more consistent in our financial performance. It improves our working capital drastically because we're now leveraging the enterprise. And then ultimately starts to expand our product margins. So part of that being, you know, that technology will be spent on, you know, true value engineering and value analysis at the product level, making sure we take a holistic look at our product costs from the design standpoint, the manufacturing standpoint, and the supply chain, and expanding the product margins there. And then our last kind of concept in the presentation is the financial principles. And really, the purpose of this is that we just wanted to finish with a slide that shows that our mindset and our actions are very much aligned with creating long-term shareholder value. And I don't think that's changing here at Flowserve. We've done that well for a long time now. So the tenets of this are we will continue to return capital to our shareholders through dividends and disciplined share repurchase. We do want to invest organically in our business to include technology and process improvement. And then the other one is a disciplined approach to portfolio management. So what that means is that if things don't work for us and we don't see the growth rates that we want, then we'll divest those products and those businesses. And we'll also have a very disciplined and measured mergers and acquisition program where we're bringing new products in that best complement the Flowserve portfolio as we go forward. And we can touch on that in the Q&A if we want to. And then finally, it is our desire to remain investment grade. We think that's very important to give us the flexibility that we need in all cycles. All right, in conclusion and in summary, we plan to further capitalize on our history and expertise, as well as our presence and installed base. We believe in a positive future in our markets and that we've turned the corner in the downturn, in the down cycle. We've begun the transformation process at Flowserve, Flowserve 2.0, and we believe that this will create a company that works in today's cycle, but will also allow us to have the flexibility and the scale to work in the upcycle as well. And then finally, we will continue to be good stewards of the capital and the resources that our investors trust us to have within the company. So again, thank you for being here this morning. And for those on the webcast, thank you for participating. And we're happy to answer any questions that you have right now. Yes. And I'm going to repeat the question for those on the web here.
Thanks. What you're doing is very sweeping. And I'm thinking about all of these local QRC managers who day-to-day operation is going to change a lot. And so my questions are, number one, are there new incentives for these folks that will help them swim with the new tide? And number two, how do you aim to ferret out the situation where more difficult for them to change and it's not working.
Yeah. So just to repeat the question was, you know, these are broad and sweeping changes that we were talking about, and you specifically are on the QRC network and the concerns there. that how are we going to implement that and how does it tie to incentive programs? So I would just say the QRC system, you know, that network, the 183 that are out there around the world, is a relatively small part of that of the change. I would say, you know, those are reasonably well managed, and we want that entrepreneurial spirit at that local QRC and service network. What I did see, and I've seen this now as I went around the Gulf Coast and as I've gone to our European and other facilities on the QRC network, we've got to define our process better, and we've got to really focus on process procedural adherence. And so that'll be a big tenet in terms of having a defined step and process that's more efficient and more optimal than having lots of disparate processes. And then the other thing is just leveraging our QRC network. And so what I've seen is that we'll have QRCs that are roughly, you know, 40 or 50 miles apart, and yet we don't talk about capacity or sharing of resources and things like that. And so to me, it's more about making sure that we're leveraging the entire network than making drastic changes at the QRC level. A lot of the more systemic and bigger changes are going to impact our manufacturing process more than the QRCs. And then just to touch on your incentive standpoint, we will change our incentive plans in 2018, and we're going to push our incentives much more to a local level than they've ever been in the past. Yes?
In layman's terms, can you just discuss what the problems at IPPR are and what's necessary?
Yeah, so the question just what are the problems in IPD, and what's the path to start to fix those? So I'd say, you know, obviously IPD problems are not new, right? We've been facing this now for a while. I've spent a considerable amount of time on it. You know, really when we look at what's happened in IPD, we've got some facilities that are performing incredibly well and performing basically at their best performance level when we look at it operationally. And then we have a handful that are completely not performing. So just on every level are not doing what we want or need them to do. So it's been a very focused effort on about three facilities. And what we've done is we've put a hit team in each of those locations, and I'm personally reviewing the operational metrics on a regular basis at these locations. What I've seen is that the internal operational metrics are starting to improve. And so we're seeing a positive response to the changes that we have. We're not necessarily converting that into margin expansion at this point. But we know that doing the things that we're doing and driving the right operational metrics, which will lead to clearing of our past due backlog, eliminating the excess absorption that we have in our facilities, and the overtime and everything else will ultimately drive better financial results. But when we look at IPD, right, the bookings are where we want them to be. The revenue is essentially on plan. Now, if we can accelerate our cycle time, we're going to have a much higher revenue. And our gross margins or our booked margins are where they need to be as well. And so all of this is within our control, which is good news and bad news. But what we need to do is complete the action items here. So I'd say in summary is it's an isolated problem to three locations. We have a team of people with unbelievable amount of visibility on making those changes. But you know, when you get into a problem like we've had, it just takes time to work through that. And we're now working that through the system. David and I have spent a lot of time on this, and in fact, he's at one of the locations this week, and he and I will be in another location that's on the list in 2 weeks' time. Yeah.
Just a quick follow-up on that. How long a fix is that? 12-month fix?
Yeah, like, I don't want to get into the exact quarter that this is recovered, but what I'd say is, you know, I expect improvement quarter over quarter here, right? An improvement can be on the operational side and will ultimately transition to the financial side. Yeah.
You walk through the margin potential long term. If you break down how much of the fixing was broken down, how much is price and how much is long.
Yeah, I think honestly, we kind of gave a little bit of guidance in Q2 on where IPD needs to be, but it's got to be a team's business for me, right? And so I really believe by doing a lot of the internal things, we're like 90% there. The business. Yeah, at the current moment. And so we've got to do the self-help first, and get on that. What I would say is pricing is the key, element here though as well. And that would get us, you know, maybe it's, you know, 85-15, but you know, we've got to get priced as well. We've already started to move pricing up on the better performing businesses. The problem is when you're not performing and delivering to your customers, it's very hard to start asking for price increase.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the other question is, has there been market share loss in that? And, you know, while, you know, I don't have the specific numbers, anytime you get into problems like we've had where our lead times go out, then obviously we're going to lose market share. And I don't have the exact number on that. I would say some of our team members are in denial in that fact, but, you know, when your lead times go out by 40%, you're not going to get the business. And so it certainly happened. Now, the big question is, as we start to bring those lead times down, we start to improve our business, how fast can we get that work in? And what I'd say is, you know, those products and brands have incredible, you know, power in terms of attracting customers, and it's such a short cycle business that we should start to see that improvement pretty quickly. Okay, yeah, in the back of the room.
And customers taking delivery and stuff. One more color about that.
Yeah, so the question for the folks on the web was, there were some delays in the second quarter around customers picking up work. And can I provide some more commentary around that? You know, as we said in the second quarter earnings call, most of those were very specific to projects. A lot of it was in our valve business. I'm going to look at Jay here for confirmation, but I think all of that has now been cleared out and has been picked up and collected here in Q3. So I really do think it was an individual and an isolated event, although it was kind of three or four projects. The timing was not fortuitous for us in the second quarter. Now, what I would say is that, you know, the Hurricane Harvey and the impact on the Gulf Coast is going to introduce a different set of problems in that region. But the problems in the specific examples we gave in Q2 are behind us. Yes. I'm sorry. Say that again. So I had said we had three facilities that were underperforming in IPD, and the question is just what percentage of that is of the whole portfolio is it? The three facilities make up about 30-40% of the IPD platform. So they're, unfortunately, they're very big, and they had a meaningful impact historically on margin for us. Yeah.
I know you talked about focus area for you, getting the organization aligned around key metrics that you're going to define. Just want to see where you felt the workforce was in regards to that today, and kind of your vision or roadmap or where you want to get that eventually.
Yeah. So the question is just around key metrics and kind of where we are in putting those important metrics in place and then ultimately driving those forward. So I'd just start at a higher level with the board. And so with the board, we've had a lot of discussions with the comp committee in terms of what's the high level for the executive team. And, you know, we're not locked in on this. I don't want to go into too many specifics, but it's your basic set of metrics, right? There needs to be something on growth. There's got to be something on, you know, what we deliver in terms of our commitments. And then there's something on returns. And so I personally like return on invested capital. That will be a big portion of what I get incentivized on in the executive team. And so I think at the high level, we're addressing that, and that will come out, obviously, in our proxy statement in 2018. And then for driving the business internally, I basically implemented a new set of KPIs in my first month because I did not like what we were looking at before. That's very focused at the platform level and driving the right things. And so as you would expect, right, you know, it's all about, you know, meeting your commitments on a quarterly basis with the platforms and then having the right metrics that will do two things for me. One, make sure that we're progressing the business. Two, highlight any problems. So early awareness of problems and issues so I can go back and bring, you know, the right resources to fix those problems. But then three, focus on, you know, again, the three things that are super important, right? Growth, margin expansion, and then ultimately returns. And so we've got a lot of working capital metrics that, quite frankly, weren't there before. The attention and focus wasn't there before. And we track that pretty maniacally now on a regular basis.
That was one of the areas, I guess, that one of the outcomes was the free cash flow conversion. And,
yeah.
And can you just touch on how you guys are thinking about that or any specifics you can provide around free cash flow and how you think about it?
So the question was just free cash flow conversion. And, you know, before it's been relatively anemic here, if you use a different word. And then how best to drive that going forward. And so I'd say, you know, obviously there's lots of components to free cash flow. Number one is just we've got to get our EBITDA margins up, right? So that's the IPD turnaround, more of the realignment program to take out some of that structural cost. And then on the other side of it is really a significant improvement in the working capital. And so we've got a focus plan today. We've got it very visible. If there's a big prize here, what I would say is, we'll make progress on that by just making it visible. My commitment with the team in terms of looking at our receivables and really focusing on the inventory. And so there's a quick win there, and I don't want to put a number on what the quick win is, but I do think we start to drive that down relatively quickly. However, if you think about the whole prize, that quick win might only be about 15% of the total prize. The other 85% is truly systemic, longer term kind of program. We need to put a better program in place to get that prize. And what I mean with that is, it's really around inventory, right? And so we've got to do a much better job on our long and medium term planning. We've got to implement a very robust sales and operational planning process, and we've got to have strong material management competency. And I don't really see those skills in place today. And so we've got to put process in place, and we're probably going to have to do a pretty big training effort with our team to really get inventory back in line where it needs to be. But look, there is a big prize here, and I just, we're looking at quarter over quarter improvement until we can get there.
I appreciate that. I don't want to get a specific amount or target on working capital, but in terms of the quick win, I guess we'll put that around, or maybe just one for action.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the quick win is just, it's attention and focus. It's more around receivables, quite frankly, because our receivable position's not good. So it's how do we collect those receivables? And then there are some easy wins on the inventory side, right? Let's not order way too early. Let's do the right things. And so, we'll get some benefit there, but I would just say it's probably only 15% of the prize. Hopefully we'll start to see that in the quarters to come. Yeah.
In terms of capital allocation, obviously you're very focused internally at the moment, but in the context of an industry cycle that might be turning, curious your thoughts on M&A, both what you might be looking at in the future, as well as general industry consolidation.
Yeah. So the question just is on capital allocation and our philosophy more on mergers and acquisitions and how we're thinking about that given the context of the cycle. Ideally we'd be in a different place today, right? And if I were comfortable in our ability to generate results on a consistent basis and we had things running the way I'd like to be running, I think we'd be an active participant in the current marketplace. And so, both the valve side and the pump sides is incredibly dynamic. I believe that will continue, right? I don't think there'll be a lack of deals or opportunities as we go forward. I'm just very concerned about our ability to bring something in-house right now, given what I've seen operationally. And so we want to focus on our operations. We want to get that into a position that makes sense. With that said, I'm not afraid to do, a tuck-in or a small acquisition that complements our portfolio, and I have, confidence in our team to deliver the synergies and the integration plan. And so I'd say, if we were looking at that, there's lots of things going on in the valve space, and so I'd have more confidence bringing something into valves than I would into IPD right now, which is a little obvious. But so I think valves, tuck-in acquisitions, incremental technology, we'd be open to do that. We've got to be a little more cautious on the pump side right now until we get things working. But, if we start to move forward with the program that gets us the performance that we want, then I think we've got to be we need to be the ones that are starting to bring consolidation to an incredibly fragmented market space.
Given where you think we might be in the cycle, do you see a higher rate of industry consolidation going forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a couple public ones out there right now, and so, I think it was probably a little bit more than what we've seen in the last 2 years, but I don't think that changes. I think people were hunkered down because they weren't sure what the upside look like. Now that things starting to look like they're improving, then people are more willing to have these discussions. But I don't think, I just think it is such a dynamic space and there's so many opportunities. I don't think this is, if we're on the sidelines for the next 9 months, we're going to be fine. there will always be opportunities in this space. Yeah.
Maybe just kind of step you back when we are in cycles. You've heard it. Oil and gas downturn where demand has seen all-time highs. So the amount of hydrocarbons flowing through the system has never been greater. So I know you've been through a few of these cycles, mostly demand related, not supply related.
Yeah.
How do you think it's recovered from such things? I'm saying that refining utilization never run harder in the U.S. this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great answer here in terms of what's that inflection look like. But I just think, you know, if you look back on those curves, right, all of those are now at an inflection point. And so I just think at some point we start to see growth. And I think Flowserve, again, is, you know, we've got the ability to put our products across the whole portfolio. And if we're doing the right things from a market standpoint, a market segment, really thinking about attractive markets and putting our products and services into those, we should be growing faster than what the markets give us. And so, you know, I'm not going to say the recovery is a 5% or a 3%. I quite frankly, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to predict that. But I do know we're at a turning point. Capital will go into all of those markets as we go forward. And we've got the ability, if we're doing the right things, to grow faster than what the market is. It was a good non-answer, huh? Yeah, it was a Friday.
You've spoken about, you know, refocusing on the markets and streamlining the product line into those areas where there's an appropriate return and you have an advantage. So what share of the product line or revenue do you envision not selling in the future?
So the question was just, you know, with the product rationalization and looking at the portfolio, what percentage of the product line do we not plan to divest or sell in the future? Look, right now, I'm very happy with the portfolio that we have, right? So we've made some niche divestitures on the valve side. I think our valve rationalization is where it needs to be. And, you know, today, I think, you know, each of the brands and platform that we have has the ability to grow. On the EP, the engineered division, really that's more of a, you know, it's a little bit hard to explain, but it's more of a homogenous type business that is essentially just we're engineering that new pump or solution for the application. So there's not really a specific divestiture there. The one that I'm not comfortable with yet is IPD, and really you're bringing David in here to help me think about that portfolio will be, you know, very important to me. It's a new space for me, quite frankly. And so I want to bring David combined with our head of marketing technology to relook that portfolio. So I just say if there's anything that might, you know, we might do in the near future, it would most likely be with that IPD portfolio. But right now there's nothing on the slate.
With David on board and then Lee joining about a week and a half, are there other key hires you see required when you're building out your leadership?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, with the new hires, are there anybody, is there anything else that we need to bring into the team, the portfolio? No, honestly, I'm in recruiting fatigue right now, and so I'm going to take a little break in terms of bringing people in. I have been interviewing a lot of candidates over the last 6 months, and so, you know, right now I'm very happy with the team, but at the same time, I'm not afraid to bring the right people in, right? And so if there's somebody that's unbelievably talented and I think I can get them on our full-serve team, then we're going to bring the best possible players in. And, you know, if we're not getting the performance we need by other people, then we'll move them out and we'll bring somebody else in. And so, but I think, you know, right now we've got a team. We just spent a week off-site talking about strategy and doing a little bit of a team building session to where we're making sure that we can work together and provide, you know, the best possible leadership for our organization. And, you know, again, I take that very seriously in terms of, you know, our ability as a team to lead Flowserve in the right direction. And so I'm very comfortable with the players that we have right now, but don't be surprised if you're seeing a new name pop up here in the, you know, first or second quarter. Yeah, in the back. Yeah. So the question is just with all the new people, how do you think about disruption and risk, and particularly on the client-facing side? You know, really the folks that have been brought in, I'll address the client-facing one, I'll go to just broader risk. The folks that we've brought in, you know, are really more on the functional support side and aren't necessarily, you know, facing the customer. David would be the exception. You know, what I'd say is Tom Pajonas has been in that role, but he's also been wearing many hats before, and so, you know, quite frankly, he wasn't doing a whole lot of time in front of our customers. And so I think, you know, David's got a nice name in the industry. He's been with the industrial clients before. And I think our customers are going to be thrilled to start talking to somebody of David's caliber. And so I'm not worried about customer and client facing. Our sales leadership team, the ones that are really out there in front of our customers, we haven't changed that at all. So that's in place, and that's very important for me to have that consistency and that continued message with our customer. You know, in terms of disruption internally, this is a big issue for me. And I say issue, it's something we just need to be focused on and manage well. And so we will roll out as we, you know, we're still very new in this. In fact, we defined FlowServe 2.0 just over a month ago. We rolled it out to our top 100 leaders within FlowServe in July. So we're just now building the principles and the tenets of what the program looks like. But the change management aspect of this can't be understated. And so, you know, fortunately, I've gone through a pretty massive integration here recently where we were pretty effective in that change management approach. And we'll use a lot of tenets of what we did on that integration here at FlowServe to make sure that we don't have disruption, we mitigate the risk in driving this change. But this is, you know, somebody said it before. I mean, you know, we are after some pretty broad and sweeping changes at FlowServe, and we know we've got to get a lot better if we're going to participate at a high level in the current marketplace. And so, you know, part of that starts with defining that problem statement and showing folks very clearly that we're underperforming. And so we've now created the burning platform with the second quarter internally that has everybody pretty focused on the need and the desire to do things right and change things. Yeah.
Can you, in broad terms, help us quantify a little bit in the next several years without putting a date on it? You know, if we get back to prior peak revenue last cycle, you're going to have 60% margin with all the actions you guys are taking. 100 bits of that, 400 bits of that, if you give us a general range for how that looks, and, you know, kind of cycle to cycle, and maybe trough first, how much higher you think you can manage it to. And then, what should be, it sounds like this will take some time, basically.
It is. Here. The first one was just on how do we think about margins through the cycle, and if we get back to a peak, kind of what would the margins look like in this longer-term change? And the second one was more around what are the early signs that we're making progress in this change? So the first one is, you know, look, I'm a pretty competitive person, and I always want to beat what anything is out there. And so, you know, I'm not going to say we can get to, you know, the margins that we saw in the last peak or how fast we can do that, but that's certainly the target, right? And if we're running the company efficiently, leveraging scale that I've talked about, have common platforms and systems, there's no reason why we can't have a higher margin percentage than what we've had in the past. And so that's certainly going to be the goal and the objective. What I would say in terms of your progress on the transformation, let us provide a little more guidance as we kind of get forward and start to define this plan a little bit more on kind of how we track this and what those milestones look like and how we do it. But just from an external standpoint, what I would say that the first place it is going to show up would be product margins, right? And so IPD margin improvement would be number one to say, okay, is Scott and the team doing the right things? Then I would start to say, is our SG&A getting in line and what we need to do in terms of your overall flow serve? And then again, with working capital, I think we'll have, you know, a relatively, you know, a nice win early on, but then that's going to take a long time, right? To really get that mid and long-term planning in place and the true material management that needed at FlowServe. So that one's going to be a little bit out there in the, you know, in the later quarters. Yeah.
I'm always concerned when an enemy team comes into an operation that maybe hasn't been successful because it takes time to fund collect pressure from all the dead bodies.
Yeah.
And obviously the accounting issues that arose between one of the dead bodies. Do you feel like in the first 6 months of your tenure, you've been able to identify all the negative surprises that may happen?
Yeah.
Sort of past that, now we're in this operation.
Yeah, so the question is just, you know, how confident am I in my ability in the first 6 months to understand or find all the problems and the issues that are out there in FlowServe? Lee's coming on board, right? I don't wear the financial hat, but obviously I'm well versed in operations, spent a lot of time on the finance side. I've been to all of our major manufacturing facilities. I've spent a lot of time with our teams, and we've done a lot of work as we go forward. And I'm comfortable that, you know, we've got a lot of the bigger issues and I've got a good view in terms of the context and the current state of operations. Now Lee's going to come in with a different lens and perspective and, you know, we'll see what happens there. But on the material weakness issue, I just want to remind folks it was very much isolated to, you know, there's really two facilities. One was the cause of the major problem. The other one was more of a mistake on receivables. But there was one issue at a single site. And what I'd say is that's very much contained. We published our remediation plan, and I'm very confident that we'll work through the accounting issues here in our first two quarters and work off that material weakness. So I'm not overly concerned about that. You know, I would say, you know, what I'm more concerned about is just really understanding kind of the state of operations and how we conduct our business. I think I've got a pretty good grasp on that. But again, I'm, you know, it's 6 months in. We'll have a fresh set of eyes on IPD. We're going to have a fresh set of eyes on the entire financial position, and we'll see what happens.
On the SG&A, it sounds like a lot of effort and money has to be spent short-term savings you want.
Yeah.
Your insurance position centralizing a lot of roles that are decentralized today. How should we look at them? Well, one is just what should be all surprised on the SG&A side. SG&A is probably a problem to my roles. What they all surprise where you want to see it. But then realistic on time.
Yeah, no, it's a really fair point. So the question just on the SG&A side is, you know, what does that prize look like? And given all the initiatives and actions, kind of, you know, what can we expect as we go forward? You know, we're in the process of defining what these actions look like. And so, you know, whether it's capital or expense, right, there is going to be an investment to get to what I'm talking about. I don't have those numbers yet. You know, when we look at kind of what IT spends on an annual basis, we look at how much capital we deploy on an annual basis and kind of what we're doing today. I'm hopeful that we start to tuck some of these programs into what we're doing today and we're redirecting our efforts and our funds. And so I'm not going to say we're going to be able to do that 100%. What I will say is that there are tremendous opportunities to stop doing a lot of things and be more focused on things that are ultimately going to drive the returns that I think that we can and as part of these programs here. In terms of SG&A target, right, I mean, you guys look at a lot of industrial companies, right? There's no reason that we should be, you know, where we are today. And, you know, most good companies in this space in the manufacturing environment are running at a high teens to low 20s. And so we've got to get there. We took a chunk out here at the beginning of Q3 or the beginning or at the end of Q2, and we're going to continue to start to do that. Now, as we develop these initiatives, we're going to have to repopulate and repurpose some of this. And so I'd say, you know, we'll come out with the, as we go the 18 plan and guidance, we'll start to talk a lot more about what that looks like and with more granularity. It's got to get better, though. Yeah.
The working capital changes that you're looking at, that's just an impact to cash flow, or is this also an impact on the P&L?
The question was, the working capital changes, will it just be more on the cash flow side or does it have an impact on the P&L? No, it's primarily cash flow generation, right? As we've got a lot of inventory that's stuck in different positions and we've got receivables that, quite frankly, we haven't put the effort that we need to start driving collection. So as those things start to come through, it's really it's a mostly cash flow impact. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks. That's a timeline in terms of when we'll start to hear a little bit more of meat on the bone in terms of targets and what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, so just the question just is kind of, you know, on our transformation, the Flowserve 2.0, when do we start to see more specifics and what that timeline looks like? You know, we're going through our planning process right now. We were away last week for the first time. We created a lot of the thoughts and theories in terms of where we need to go. We're really, you know, I mean, I had ideas, but then we started to solidify them last week. And so, now we're turning the team loose to start to do the detailed planning here. But I would say, you know, certainly, you know, in the first quarter, we'll start to talk more. And then as we go into kind of 2018, I think we'll have a much more detailed plan that we can start sharing externally. And we'll be deliberate on what the actions are and what we expect to get out of those actions. Okay. Yeah.
Talk about pricing, how it's different this cycle versus, let's say, the last cycle. And so the opportunities to raise pricing over
the next year. Yeah. So the question just is on pricing and how it was, you know, it's different in this cycle versus the last cycle and what do we expect on the pricing side. I wasn't here in the last cycle, so I'm taking it more kind of third party from our team or secondhand from our team. I'll just give the current environment right now. Everybody in the space has excess capacity, right? And so there's no surprise there. It's well known. We're taking significant action on that capacity. Others are as well. It's going to be hard for us to get meaningful price increase here in the short term. With that said, there are parts of our business that we've been moving on price over, you know, in the, even the, you know, the last quarter or the last 3 or 4 months that I've been here. So I think there are specific opportunities. We just need to be, you know, really focused on where we can get that and making sure when we have the opportunity to do that, that we are leading on those price increases. And so we'll be very deliberate about it. You know, obviously it's to me the single easiest way to get returns if we can get that price to stick and drop straight down. And so we definitely think that's part of the program, but I don't want to understate the amount of excess capacity that's out there with the peer group. And so it's definitely problematic. We just got to work through it.
Yeah. Remind us how long it takes your backlog for approvals to write. You're going to be recognizing revenue on stuff that was called 6 months or 9 months ago. Just remind us how that goes through.
Yeah. So the question is just on backlog conversion and kind of our cycle times across the platforms. So they're all a little bit different, right? Our engineered products is, and Jay's going to correct me if I'm off here, but engineered products is typically, you know, a year would be on the outset. It averages around 9 months. IPD is much shorter. We actually want it to be significantly shorter than it is today. Ideally, we're delivering products in kind of a 6 to 8 week period. Today, we're probably at the 12 week mark, right, in terms of our average deliveries. And then valves kind of spans the spectrums, right? We do big projects that are highly complicated. With some critical applications that could take upwards of kind of that 8 month time frame, and then we've got a stock business that we can turn in about a month to 2 months.
Typically, we will burn about 90% of our backlog within a coming 12 month period. If you looked at it in aggregate.
Yeah. So for those on the web that didn't hear that, Jay responded saying that typically we can convert 90% of our backlog in a 12 month period. Yeah.
Apologize
to
bring up IPD again.
It's a big issue.
I still don't understand what plants are choked up. Right. I sense volumes down.
Why is plants
so choked up?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've done some consolidations at facilities. And so this was pretty early on in the realignment when we didn't have our process documented as well as it needs to be and ironed out as well as it needs to be. And we put a lot of complexity into facilities that weren't capable of managing that complexity. And so we're now working through some of those problems that started, quite frankly, a long time ago.
Okay, the gross margin is where you want.
Yeah, the booked margin, right? So the inbound orders, we're actually getting the price that's okay. And so now it's really up to us to work through that past due backlog that's sitting there. And, you know, as you guys know, right, any product that's sitting around is just absorbing more and more cost. And so we've got to get it cleaned out of the past due. We've got to streamline the operations and we've got to have an efficient process for now a much more complicated set of products within a facility. And there's three that's two of the three problems that we have. Yeah.
But on the same topic, my understanding was that when the prior management had consolidated that these facilities took out products that they weren't producing before and that presented this complexity. Is the plan the same? Are they still producing that same span of products, or have some of those products been moved out and they've gone back a little more toward what they were historically?
No, so we haven't unwound any of the realignment or moves. So nothing's changed from that standpoint. So just on the whole realignment principle, right? So, you know, there were some issues about, you know, how we did it in the early days. I've spent a lot of time with our realignment team and making sure, because, you know, unfortunately I've had to shut and move a lot of products in the down cycle previously. And there's a methodology to how to do that. And if you follow the process and you're doing it in a methodical fashion, a lot of it is IT and systems related. Then you can move product and there's still risk and issues, but you can do it without massive disruption. When you don't follow that process and you don't do the first step first, the second step in that sequence, then you run into a lot of problems. And unfortunately, in the early ones, we've got those problems, and it's really isolated to two facilities. One is clearly working its way out. The other one, we're beginning to see the operational metrics turn. We're not seeing financial metrics at this point, but we will. But we're working through that. And now we've got, I'm very comfortable that our team that's leading the realignment understands the process. We've now successfully completed several of these different realignments. We completed two in the second quarter that I'm not going to say went flawlessly, but do not have any of the major issues that we're facing with the IPD ones. And so I'm comfortable in our approach now, but historically it wasn't good.
Talking about the realignment, they're obviously supposed to be positive to margins. They're also taking a little bit of capital. So at some point, it's helpful to investors to get some clean P&L. We're not doing.
I agree.
When we talk about the balance of accelerating the realignment, expanding the realignments, can you maybe just give some scope of how far, understanding your company going, what is the capital?
Yeah. So the question is kind of, when do we get to more clean operations on in showing that cleanly in the P&L with the realignment program? Because it does cost us capital, and and we're obviously putting that below the line as we go forward. So we're going to announce, there's a bigger program. There's some announcements coming up here at the back half of 17. In terms of kind of the heavy lift, we do expect that to be done, very much complete toward the end of 2018. Jay, Lee, and I need to talk about what that looks like externally and when we kind of, go back to normal operations. So I don't have the answer to that, and really, Lee's going to be a big input on that. But I'm not real happy about having you to talk about a realignment program. And so I personally want to get away from that as soon as we can. And again, I think, as the management team, as we move forward, right, this is our job, right? We should constantly be looking at our facilities. We should constantly be thinking about where do we build the next facility to best support our customers and have the best cost position. And so I think it really should be transitioned into normal operations, and we start to talk about it as a normal part of what we do.
One last one, but one of the questions earlier talked about, if we got back to T clouds, I think there's some questions whether T clouds will be sustainable at the same exchange. You've been to a few of the sites. Do you think peak revenue, did we see peak revenue again based on?
Right. So the question just is, within the cycle, can we theoretically return back to peak revenue? And, and you said I've been through a few of these. I have. It's always been on the upstream side. And what I would say is, in all the ones that I've experienced, I've been shocked that we've returned faster to the peak than I thought. You indicated before this cycle is different. It is very much on the supply driven side. I don't think, the return will be as fast as what we've seen historically, certainly on the oil and gas side. But I do think that, I would not underestimate, the power of these type cycles. And while the world is changing, there's still an incredible need for hydrocarbons and chemicals and power and everything else. And so, it's my job to grow the company as best and as fast as we can and grow it profitably. And I think, again, given the platform that we have and the space that we cover, right, there are a lot of things that we can do to gain market share and to be in niche applications that we aren't in today. And so I fully expect for us to return back to peak levels and, in fact, to continue to grow beyond that. All right, Jay, are we at conclusion here?
Assuming there's no more questions. Anybody else have further questions?
Great. All right. So just, we want to do one more? Yeah, go ahead.
If you just assume you would have X million of additional savings, could you just rank those into how much is IPD, how much is manufacturing, supply chain, SG&A?
X savings on.
What would be the largest bucket? What would be the second largest bucket?
I need to see your model, and then we can you go through this. All right, so the question is just if we were to get savings, kind of what percentages and where do those savings start to come from, right? So I think, again, IPD should be the quickest win for us, right? And it's just restoring operations to basically a normal level of competency. So we should start to see IPD driving savings and turning results there pretty quickly. The next would be, SG&A will be a focus for us, and ideally we're expanding some volume, we're starting to leveraging the cost base that we have. If we're not doing that, we start to take cost out. The caveat there goes back to the previous question, is just with these programs and initiatives, can I repurpose SG&A and still get that back in line, or are we going to carve out some additional SG&A for a period of time to support these initiatives. And that is to be determined, right? We'll do that in our budget process, which begins literally next week as we start to plan the budget. And then from there, as the markets start to come up, right, we start to absorb more manufacturing capacity, which will help us substantially on our absorption rate. And we start to bring price in there as well, which will start to bring margins back up.
Just one last one on manufacturing. Is it there about driving efficiency, or is there also an opportunity for maybe doing more outsourcing, doing more assembly type work?
So the question just is on manufacturing and kind of what is the prize there in terms of opportunity. It's a combination of a lot of things. So I think one is, you know, continuing realignment and getting excess capacity out of the system. So that's our first and biggest focus. Two is efficiency within the facilities. And so when I made the statement, we've got to return or get to manufacturing as a core competency. It really is that, right? It's laser focus on driving productivity in that facility. And then we've got to invest, like, I don't think we need to invest in any roofline whatsoever within the corporation, but we've got to start to invest in technology in our shop floors. And so there's a lot of really good things that are going on in the manufacturing space. Flowserve is scratching the surface on that today. And so we've got to start to bring automation technology into our shop, which will ultimately drive down labor costs and drive efficiency. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities just within the four walls of our existing factories today. Okay. Well, for those on the web, we're going to close this out, and just want to say thank you for your participation. And for those that are here in New York, we very much appreciate your support and appreciate you coming today to spend some time with Flowserve. So thank you very much.